You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode number 80. The last show was all about New Orleans food, drink, and dining during the holidays. I was joined by local food writer and restaurant critic Ian McNulty. We had a fun discussion about the tradition of Réveillon, where to get a great old-fashioned, and lots more. Even if you listen in far after the holiday season, you'll pick up lots of great ideas for where to eat and drink in New Orleans. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. Today's episode is one I've wanted to do for a while. It's about the Vietnamese population here in New Orleans. We'll explore when and how they came to be a part of New Orleans, and why and how they're such a vibrant and important part of the city today. But before we jump in, I want to tell you about Two Chicks Walking Tours. Longtime listeners may remember Christine Miller from episode 17, which was all about the Garden District. Christine is the owner of Two Chicks Walking Tours, one of the very best tour companies in the city. Want to explore the Garden District? They got you covered with a wonderful tour that provides plenty of history, along with fun facts about some of the neighborhood's residents, both past and present. You'll get to see where Anne Rice lived, as well as the present-day homes of actor John Goodman and Saints legend Archie Manning, plus plenty more. You'll also get to learn about our cemeteries, because their Garden District tour includes Lafayette Cemetery, which is in the heart of the Garden District and right across the street from Commander's Palace. Two Chicks also offers several varieties of French Quarter tours, as well as tours of St. Louis Cemetery No. 1. Whatever you choose, know you'll be in great hands and you'll have a wonderful time. Use code BEYOND and save 15% over at twochickswalkingtours.com. That's T-W-O, chickswalkingtours.com, all one word. Now, let's jump into today's episode. My guest today is a New Orleans City Councilwoman and a native of Vietnam. She represents District E, which includes the Lower Nine, as well as most of New Orleans East and the Intercoastal Waterway. It's such a large swath of land, and it's a diverse community made up of about 75% African-American, about 25% Vietnamese, and we'll get into all that today. Welcome to the show, Ms. Cindy Nguyen.
Thank you, Mark, for having me. I appreciate you.
Cindy, I'm so excited. I know it's busy trying to coordinate schedules, and it's the holidays, and obviously you work as a councilwoman, but I'm really excited to have you on today.
Well, I'm excited to share and bring conversation to the table.
And I should mention, we are here on Chef Mentura Highway at Pontilli Coffee, which is a great little coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about, there's also a really good snowball stand that they own.
That's
right behind here.
I love having, well, of course, District E, we don't have our own coffee shop yet.
Getting there.
Where we're going to be getting a PJ's. Actually, they're going to open up this coming Saturday, December the 15th.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we're excited about it. But Pontilli is also next to my district. But the significant behind Pontilli Cafe, and I don't know if you know, but it's actually a priest that owned. He's a pastor.
Okay.
And he minister individuals that has gone through alcoholism. And
okay.
So he helped bring them back and provide job for them. So he owns the cafe, the car washing mm-hmm. next to us. And he's also now working on a restaurant. So a lot of the people that works at the cafe and at the car wash are those individuals. They're trying to get their life back together.
Sure.
And I love supporting that type of business.
Yeah, I do too. We did an earlier episode. I was mentioning to you with Megan, who did a book called Crescent City Snow, all about snowball stands
mm-hmm.
in the city. And Megan chose Pontilli Snow, which again is right behind here,
mm-hmm.
As a focal point to come and talk about the community a little bit. I definitely want to get into the community and the jurisdiction and certainly the Vietnamese culture here. But I want to talk a little bit about you for a minute, if we can. So you were born in Vietnam, right?
Yep. I was born and left Vietnam when I was 5 years old.
So your family left in around 1975?
1975, yeah.
Right after the fall of Saigon, I
Correct.
Presume? And I think one of the things, what was the story how did you guys end up here in New Orleans? I'm sure it had to be a long way to get here.
Yeah, well, definitely there was a long distance from Vietnam over to America, right? So when we came to America in 1975, we actually landed in Arkansas. where thousands of immigrants, there was a camp, immigrant camp, the refugee camp there that was helping many immigrants to resettle. And so while we were there, we got sponsored by families in Monticello, Iowa. So my parents, it's like, how bad can it be? It only took them 3 months to figure it out. It was way too cold for my grandfather. So I came over with my parents. My mother was pregnant with my little brother, with my little sister, my older brother, and my older sister. And then I also had my aunt with me. And so, of course, so we decided to go to Monticello. Then the weather wasn't aligned with my grandfather. And then we heard that thousands of Vietnamese immigrants are going to New Orleans and that the weather is very similar to Vietnam. Mm. And that my dad could work as a fisherman because my dad is a fisherman by trade. Mm. And so, and then there was Catholic Charity was helping, you know, the Vietnamese immigrant to resettle. And then there was also a Vietnamese priest who now, you know, has passed away. And so my dad's like, well, that sounds like a better idea than staying up here in the north where they couldn't handle the cold weather at all.
Sure. And I think a lot of listeners, are not from New Orleans and probably don't realize that Catholic Charities really helped bring thousands of Vietnamese refugees into New Orleans.
Yes, they were and continue to be very resourceful to families that are struggling. You know, I remember just them helping my parents to find housing, you know, clothing, because of course we came over with literally nothing. The only clothes that we had was the clothes that we had on our back.
Sure.
But yeah, so they were extremely instrumental in helping thousands of Vietnamese families to resettle. And we were very fortunate to find New Orleans as a very viable location for us to live.
And one of the things, and I grew up, as we were talking before we came on, I grew up in New Orleans East, in your district, actually. And in many ways, I cannot imagine what it's like to immigrate and do so under stress and leave everything behind. But there were some similarities. For one, the climate,
mm-hmm.
Vietnam, largely Catholic, and so a lot of people came over that had the Catholic faith.
Correct.
New Orleans, of course, very, even today, predominantly Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
The fishing community, as
That's
you
right.
mentioned.
That's right. I was going to add the fishing, you know, because, you know, my dad came over. He didn't speak English, so, of course, he wanted to be able to start working so he could take care of the family. New Orleans allowed him to do that, that he could bring the skills that he inherited from Vietnam and a work that he's familiar with.
Sure.
Right? And so it was a blessing for us. So my father fished along with 1,000, you know, Vietnamese men that went out and just started working because, mm-hmm. you know, we had to take care of our family.
Sure.
You know, and so, and then, you know, Catholic Charity also assisted us with Silver Side Arms Apartment, which is no longer there, but was known and helped many of us to resettle. So we were, you know, we lived on government assisted apartment that gave us a subsidy. So in that way, we could, I guess, reestablish our life mm-hmm. here in America.
And the Versailles Arms, that was out in a part of New Orleans East called Village de l'Est, or very
Correct.
Close to it.
Yeah.
Right?
So we used to call the Village, right? I
right.
think it's also known as the Village.
Yep. I used to play ball out at Kenilworth, and we
played
Village
okay,
de l'Est.
Okay, got it.
And Joe Barron and all that out there. Uh-huh. And so the population of Vietnamese that came, and ultimately today, I think the population is near 15,000 or so.
Yes. Yeah. And it's going to grow. You know, many of us have now settled, working. We have our own home. And so we're trying to help many of our family members in Vietnam to come over here legally as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think the community is now organized and set up to where we're able to help many of our family members that are still struggling in Vietnam, because the condition in Vietnam has not really improved since we left in 1975.
Sure. And as I understand it, one of the things that led you to politics was really an interest in economic development across mm-hmm. your district and really the whole city, right?
Yeah. You know, I think economic definitely is my cup of tea, where I could talk about economic development all day long and don't get bored about it. You know, what really brought me to politics was just serving the people. You know, my mm-hmm. father, I guess watching my father struggle to master, you know, and still working on his English language, but struggle to find work to take care of my brothers and I. And then he still has time to go and volunteer at the church.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and it was just amazing. And even though as a little kid, I was very playful and active, and we'll leave that alone for a second. But I started recognizing the importance of giving back, mm-hmm. the importance of bringing people together. And I also accepted and love the fact that America is my home now. And you know, we should all work together. And I've always believed that. And I think that really drove me to public servants. And this whole happened, it's called politics.
Well, and you were very much a community activist in the true sense of the word, right? Yeah. You had formed a coalition or a group to help with economic development in the community you grew up in.
Yeah, grassroots. I mean, and I love the grassroots concept because I really believe you got to stay in tune with people that you serve. You just can't get disconnected.
And it strikes me in your first year here on the council, you've done exactly that. You're out and about all the time in the community and also trying to teach others, maybe not in your district, about the wealth of opportunity and the wealth of resources in your district.
Yeah, and you know, and it's funny that we're talking about this, you know. Of course, I have the largest district, a district that has been, many people would say, underdeveloped since Katrina.
Mm-hmm, and I wanted to talk to you about that.
And so I'm dealing with all sorts of frustration. Mm-hmm. Anger, you know, their PO.
Sure.
You know, and I always tell people, I said, listen, you know, we just have to do things differently. You know, we have to do things differently, but we shouldn't, you know, get on each other's nerve. You know, I get it, you know. I said, but don't beat me up. I wasn't here.
Sure.
During that past 13 years, you know, and I want to move our district forward, but we got to move it forward in a way, in a sense that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, to me is that whatever we used to do 13 years ago, we should change because it hasn't worked.
Right, right.
So it starts with even a community resident. Not so much of, even though we may not have the proper leadership, but even as a resident, if mm-hmm. you have been saying or complaining or doing the same thing and it hasn't done anything, don't you think that you may like, maybe okay, now there's a new movement.
Sure.
Right? I feel like I'm bringing a new movement, but don't come on to a new movement with the same attitude.
Sure.
Right?
Sure. Well, and I want to give our listeners a little bit of a geography lesson. So, you know, most people probably are familiar with the French Quarter and the Warehouse District and downtown. And we've talked about mid-city on the podcast a bunch. But New Orleans East is wide. So your district is maybe
63% of the city of New Orleans.
Really? And it's maybe 75 miles long from tip to tip?
Yeah. So we're talking from the L9. Mm-hmm. And like you say, most of the E. Mm-hmm. And then I go all the way to Lake Catherine and Fork Pike, which is probably where we're at. It's another 25 miles to 30 miles from here.
Well, and for listeners, you've heard me talk with Richard Campanella about the founding of New Orleans. And the way that Bienville came in was through Lake Bourne and right there near Lake Catherine into Lake Pontchartrain, down Bayou St. John, and what we think of as mid-city today, and then down to where the French Quarter is. He didn't come up the river. He came up the river, but came through that way. And that really skirts on the edge of your district. And it does give some sense of it's big.
It's huge.
And it's very, very diverse. So you have a very large... most of, but not all of the Vietnamese community in New Orleans, because mm-hmm. there's certainly a big portion of the population on the West Bank.
Yeah.
But then you also have the Lower Nine and portions not far from where we are in Pontchartrain Park, one of the first African-American suburbs in America.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so you have really these diverse groups, ethnic and otherwise. But as you mentioned, or I want to back up, before Katrina, it was really a vibrant community. Yep. New Orleans East, I was born out there. In the hospital off of Reed Road there, but you had the plaza, you had lots of development. You have Mishu, where people might not realize it's mm-hmm. where the solid rocket boosters were mm-hmm. built for the space shuttle program for decades. But when Katrina hit, the geography that we're talking about and where we're sitting was disproportionately hit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously including the Lower Nine, and as you mentioned, it's been slow to come back.
Yeah.
Probably from lack of attention in terms of politics and money and infrastructure. Yeah.
But, you know, I've been thinking about, because I came home 20 years ago, and I believe the E was slowly dying.
I would agree.
Before Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, Katrina kind of saved us. But once Katrina came and left, what happened was that resources wasn't shared properly. Mm-hmm. If resources was divided equally, I think the East would have bounced back even better before Katrina. But we also have to recognize that the people in the East were very resilient.
Mm-hmm. In fact, the Vietnamese community in particular came back very strong and very quickly relative to the rest of New Orleans after
That's
Katrina.
That's right. I really believe that we're the one that turned on the light in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. I remember Sean and I were renovating our home mid-October of that same year.
Wow. Yeah,
most of us weren't even home yet.
No, we came back with my parents around the middle of October.
Yeah, and if you remember, if you were to come in further east, you would have to bring your own lights. There was no resources out here. You had to bring your own food in and everything. And so, and I still remember those days.
I remember having to bring medical supplies in case you cut mm-hmm, your foot or anything, right? Because you
Home Depot wasn't open at all. So, but yeah, but I, like I say, you know, people in my district are extremely resilient, very determined, which is great. And I really believe that as we continue to remove barriers, so that's one thing that my parents, and I guess coming over from Vietnam, is that my father removed barriers to make sure that we get here, to make sure that we have access to opportunities, that we have our freedom. And that's something that I bring to City Council. I believe that my role is to help remove barriers that are legal, okay?
Of course, of course.
Yeah, right? And just like what we just recently did, Mark, 2 weeks ago, I passed an ordinance. So in the L9, we realized that the lots, North Claiborne of it, was not aligned with the zoning. Hmm. And so what happened was that when anybody or an average person or developer wanted to build something North Claiborne, they had to go to the Board of Zoning, the BZA, to get waivers. Hmm. It was unnecessary, mm-hmm. right? Cost them money, cost time. And so when we saw that, and we want to thank the Planning Commission to bring that to our attention, we immediately addressed that. Mm-hmm. And so we voted, and so that is no longer a barrier. And so I really believe that will help spark up development, mm-hmm. Particularly in the North Claiborne area, in the L9. And I think the community struggle with poverty as well.
Sure.
Right? And then you also they also struggle with home ownership there. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not sure if you know, but secession is a huge problem in the L9. Mom lived there, passed away. Kids lived there, couldn't afford secession, so they just stayed there. And then when Katrina hit, I think that was the first time we ever heard of secession.
I agree. Right? I don't think most people realize what a big problem that was.
Oh, my God.
It continues to be.
Yes. I used to work for the Road Home, and so I fully get it. And we're still dealing with some of it like that. And so we're trying to find resources to help families that are low income. So in that way they can have, because legally we got to get it into the right name.
Right. And right. This is something I think listeners may not appreciate, that people in New Orleans stay in their neighborhoods for a long, long time. And so what we're talking about is people would pass down essentially their homes, but they wouldn't go through the legal process of secession.
Why?
Right, because it was, you know, my mama lived there and her mama lived there and I'm going to live there and my kids
will
live
there. We didn't think Katrina was going to hit.
And then Katrina hits and all of a sudden everyone's looking for records to prove things and you never really needed records before.
Yeah.
If you were never going to move, it didn't really matter.
Yeah, and that's the biggest problem in the L9, and because there's no legal standing, no ownership.
Sure.
And so those property becomes abandoned.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're not going to abandon those property. We're going to, you know, do our best to bring resources to the table, you know. And I've had candid conversation with property owner, family members that own property now and said, listen, if you guys are not going to do anything, you know, sell it.
Sure.
Right. You know, come to term with it. You know, there's always sibling rivalry, right?
Of course.
I don't want to sell it. I want to keep it, you know, but then I don't want to pay the money to keep the lot clean. I don't think it's fair for those that have already rebuilt. And I just really believe that you had 13 years. You should have made your mind by now.
Sure.
Sorry.
And you still see that in the city, although it's concentrated, certainly in your district. You're right. Mm-hmm. It's been long enough, and you sort of have to make your peace and move on in whatever way is best for you.
Correct.
One of the things I wanted, you know, and on the flip side of that, there's so much opportunity in your district because there is so much land.
Mm-hmm.
I see it as both obviously a challenge, a huge challenge, but you have this, you do have a vibrant community and you have so much opportunity for development. I know you've been working hard on that. And one of the things I wanted to talk about is for people not familiar with New Orleans so much in terms of particularly with the influence of the Vietnamese community, I want to talk a little bit about ways that the Vietnamese population that came here in the 70s influences so much today. Mm-hmm. If we could, a little bit, like food for one.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You not only have the seafood industry, yeah. And I grew up in high school. The way I made money when I wasn't working at my dad's restaurant was on fishing boats.
Oh.
And so we'd be out in Venice or Boothville or even out here under Seabrook Bridge. And gosh, at least half of the fishermen were Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. And it was a shared, we couldn't speak each other's language so well, but we could communicate in the, you know, in the economy of seafood.
That's right.
But today, so much of the seafood that we eat in New Orleans is caught fresh by the Vietnamese community.
Correct. And, you know, and I definitely wanted, you know, there's quite a large number of Vietnamese fishermen, but you also have Caucasian fishermen as well, you know,
sure,
right in St. Bernard Parish.
Yep.
You know, I think we kind of discovered them when the big BP oil spill.
Yes.
Right. They actually were the one that were at fishing before we came over.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely want to recognize those fishermen as well. And, you know, we're very proud of what we've been able to contribute to society, particularly in the city of New Orleans. I don't think that was something that we thought we would be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think my parents thought that this is a temporary setting, that we were going to go back to Vietnam. And so I think when we realized that this is home, you know, and I think people would say, well, let's just start working, you know, and I think that's just part of our nature. And then making sure that we keep our culture intact.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think from there, we were very blessed that people that don't look like us like our food,
sure.
You know, found us to be attractive in reference to how we raise our children, how we dress, our different cultural tradition gowns. And I think that's how we were able to participate. Because I guess if we had nasty food, you guys would not like it.
and the opposite is certainly true. I think there's so much crossover. And now, and I would argue it's really just in the last couple of years, you start to see, at least in our neighborhood where I grew up in the East, the Vietnamese neighbors that we had, first they opened Chinese restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was that there was sort of maybe Vietnamese food wouldn't be accepted.
Yeah.
But when you fast forward to today, there's fabulous Vietnamese restaurants, not only in the East, and I'd certainly welcome any suggestions you have, but throughout the city now.
Yep, yeah.
And
I have several spots. You know, you got to check out Nami's off of Tulane and North Carrollton. You got to check out Cafe Ming off of Canal. You know, check out Magazine, I think, off of Magazine
That's
Street.
That's terrific, yeah.
You've been there?
Yeah.
And so there's, you know, and not just in Orleans, but in Jefferson Parish, we're expanding, you know, pho is very common now. And actually, I was kind of shocked how pho is so embraced well, because I remember maybe 5-6 years ago when we had Pho Fest. I don't know if you know that. Yeah, and when we first did it, it wasn't received well by the American community. But now it's popular. They're coming, and which is awesome, you know. And then you see pho at the St. Rock Market,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And I think the spices and the focus on fresh ingredients mm-hmm. really is so similar to what New Orleanians have always celebrated, right? Mm-hmm. And right, pho is you know, maybe a cousin to gumbo. And it also strikes me a little bit that both...
A lighter cousin,
yes. Maybe yucca mane is a little bit closer.
Yeah, yucca mane would probably be a good comparison.
But I also think, so obviously Vietnam was a French colony, and New Orleans, of course, was under French rule. And so you get the one thing that strikes me today so much is the bread. And I'm looking here in the mm-hmm. pastry thing here, and I can see the bread. But the Dong Phong bread has showed up in a lot of New Orleans po' boy places, particularly post-Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
And the bread, I think it's different than maybe what I grew up with po' boy bread, but it's not far from that.
Yeah, it's crunchier mm-hmm. than your typical American mm-hmm. bread mm-hmm. that you would buy in the grocery store.
But you certainly see it in plenty. In fact, I would argue it's certainly up there with the largest old-time New Orleans mm-hmm. po' boy. And my friends in that industry are going to be upset, but I think it's true. And it's where it's fit because it's a good balance to it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that bakery won a James Beard Award.
That's right. Oh my God!
Last amazing.
Year, oh my God! I was in line too for the king cake too.
Yep.
And it's you know, and it's funny, we've always had it, They've been making the king cake.
Really? But it wasn't widespread throughout the community.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
And now what you're referring to is, so we're coming up on king cake season, not too far. And that particular bakery makes a very sought after king cake in the city. Mm-hmm. And you're right. For years, it was, I think, just basically sold out of their bakery. Mm-hmm. And now it's a big deal. People love it. You see it at king cake parties. It's just one of the ways that the community has really, it's become a part of the fabric of New Orleans.
I definitely want to give credit to the our new generation too. Hmm. Looking at the business model, you know, my parents is kind of like, you know, we just want to make enough money just to take care.
Sure.
Right. But now you've got the new generation goes, oh no, I want to drive a Mercedes. I want to have this, which is great, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think because of that, you know, and they're going to school. You know, our parents didn't get an opportunity to go to school. Not that they're not good business people, but they just basically just want to make sure that we run a business so we can earn an income so we can take care of the fam. Mm-hmm. But the society these days is a little bit different. So the upcoming generation are literally taking over the business for the first generation, which I think that's why you see more of the food being very trendy.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Mm, sure.
Right? Because, I mean, I know people say, well, food is food. But no, we also look at the perception, the design, how it looks, you know.
Well, in a couple of those places you mentioned, not only is the food delicious, it looks really nice, mm-hmm. too. Namie's comes to mind, right, when you said that. But there are lots of them that... and I can see what you're saying. And maybe that's true of all like succeeding generations, right? Mm-hmm. Want to do a little bit better than their parents did. They want to do a little bit more. They want to have a bigger impact.
And I think that's great. You know, I think that continues to keep the food in our culture that we'll be able to share. Because, you know, for the outside community, you have to figure out how will you eat this, right? So if looking at it entices you, then you will eat it. But if it doesn't entice you, you may not even want to eat it.
Sure. Well, and that kind of gets me to, there is a wonderful market that I'm going to guess most people listening to this don't know about. And that's the market out off Chef Highway every Saturday morning, right? And it doesn't look like any kind of market that maybe most people have ever been to. Mm-hmm. Because it is people selling things mostly that they've grown in neighborhood plots. English is certainly not the first language spoken out there.
Yeah.
But you get this... And I believe it's the only market that sells live animals for slaughter.
That's
so you
can
go buy fresh chickens or fresh ducks.
That's our specialty meat.
But it's amazing in terms of lots of chefs in the city shop out there to get the very freshest of produce and to get some unique things to blend into New Orleans food.
Yeah, you got to get up early.
Yes, like 5:30.
Yeah, you got to get up early if you want to get the best product.
I haven't been in many years, I gotta confess.
Yeah, I haven't been too. My parents, we normally in the morning we will get there and get our breakfast because the ladies will make homemade breakfast food from Vietnam. And so they will make it fresh out there for you.
Sure.
Yeah, and so I love Saturday morning to be able, my mom will go out there early after she gets out of church. You know, and then plus church, they have church every day.
Right.
So the Catholic religion is still very strong in our culture. And but you got to give it credit to a lot of our first generation that continue that tradition. Mm-hmm. You know, I haven't seen any of the young vendors out there yet.
Right. No.
It's probably way too early for them.
Right. It is early. There are also Asian markets on the West Bank where there's a decent sized Vietnamese population, though not nearly as big as New Orleans East. But the one out off Chef Highway, it's big, but you got to get there early.
That's right.
But, you know, so I grew up in the po' boy business. Longtime listeners know this. And we used to go to the French market when the French market was a true market. And it would open at 4 or 5 in the morning.
Wow.
And it was a wholesale market right there off Esplanade. Mm-hmm. All those little shops that are shops now were produce vendors, and there would be a specialty. So there was one that just sold lettuce and onions and cabbage, and another that just sold tomatoes.
Wow.
But you had to get there super early because I remember my parents would make us get up early. We'd go over there to get the produce to bring it back to the restaurant before they would drop us off at school.
Oh, wow.
Because it was done by like 9 in the morning, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's just the nature of markets.
Yeah.
But if you're interested, if you're listening and you're interested in it, you got to get up early, but it's an amazing experience and a great way to get fresh food that you can prepare yourself. You know, the other thing that we were talking about is this, again, back to the economic development and in terms of what do you see happening out here in the East and what are you hopeful for the community?
You know, well, first of all, so indicated that we're about 63% of land mass in the city of New Orleans. So we have beaucoup of land. When you think about it, very affordable land. There's several things. Of course, the big vision is to rebuild District E where family comes first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're a suburban of New Orleans, you know, and we're made up of, 7 to 9 beautiful lake neighborhoods.
Yep.
Right? So it's gorgeous. So if you haven't had a chance to come out to the E, you want to make a drive out here, you get more money. You get more square footage for your money on homes. There's over 86,000 residents. Average medium income is around 50,000. So it's, so these should be all my retail listeners, all my restaurant listeners should be knocking on my door today, mm-hmm. right? And they should, and we want them to, And I think leading into my answer is that, we want to rebuild the community where it's, where our young millennials going to continue, right? So I know people have talked about how awesome District E, the East used to have, what they have, and how it was vibrant. And I think many of it can still be real, but it has to be more upgraded.
Uh-huh, right? Sure.
So you just can't put together a bowling alley and expect it to survive.
Right.
And so I always tell people, it's like, we got to incorporate, now it's always mixed use. You hear the word mixed use all the time, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Because family now we don't have enough time. So we don't have time to go to bowling and then go over here for something else. It would be great if and that's something that I definitely want to move the district to, is how do we develop where family can just stop at one location and be able to access everything.
Sure.
And then have those type of model replicated in different areas of the East,
mm-hmm.
in the L9,
mm-hmm.
Of course, job opportunities one. I just right before I came on the show, I did a tour with the Port of New Orleans, and we were looking at property that they own in my district and in reference to what they like to do. And then got me an opportunity to tour Almanasa area,
mm-hmm.
Very underdeveloped, right? But so much growth and potential for manufacturer company.
Yep, and you're right there on the Intercoastal
exactly.
Waterway.
Exactly, and you got the rail right there. Then we have the highway, and then we have, air. So, the city of New Orleans has it all. The E has it all when you think about it, So for us is to really get out there and market the district in a way that is a gain. And it is a gain, And just as I mentioned, all the other incentive, top it all off, we're now an opportunity zone, so we're making our district where you don't have to think about wanting to, if you want to, invest into the E.
Sure.
Yeah. And so, job opportunity, I could see that heavily in the industrial park. And then, of course, we have the famous Farmer Six Flag property that everybody talks about.
Wasn't going to ask you because I know everyone does, but
yeah.
For our listeners,
I was the one that brought it up.
There was a Six Flags. It was called Jazzland before Six Flags. It's out in New Orleans, mm-hmm. east off of I-10. It was it's a huge amusement park, but now it's sort of a ghost park, and it's been there. It's been abandoned for many years.
Yeah.
And it's just prime for some sort of development.
Yeah,
there.
And it is. And we're still working. I'm very blessed to have Mayor Cantrell to be leading the city. She has a vision. She's innovative. She's bold. And she's a hardworking woman. Let me just tell you that. And she sees District E has great potential. And so we're blessed that our leader sees that vision as well. And so we have a consultant working with us to give us some thoughts, some strategic plans in reference to not just the Six Flag property, but also Lincoln Beach.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Lincoln Beach?
Yeah, yeah.
You used to play out there?
I was a little kid.
Okay.
But yeah,
So Lincoln Beach is on our table as well as the Lake Forest Plaza. People say that the mall used to be there, right?
I remember hanging
Correct.
Out in the mall as a kid.
But I think now it's like, how do we strategically look at not just moving one, but can we move all three? And why not work to move all three? And even if one is a little behind on the other one, at least we got two that is on the way. You know what I mean?
Right.
Especially two that we own. So we own the Six Flag property, and then we own Lincoln Beach. We do not own Lake Forest Plaza, as far as I am aware of.
Mm.
But so I think those the Lincoln Beach and the Six Flag is going to be something that we're going to be looking at. You know, I'll talk about Lincoln Beach. I mean, I see a look-alike Destin beachfront.
So for our listeners, let's give them a little bit of I'm going to do an episode in the spring about Pontchartrain Beach. There's a recent book out on Pontchartrain Beach. But Pontchartrain Beach was at the end of Elysian Fields, basically, in what was called Millenburg or Milneyburg. But you got to remember, this is back in the height of segregation. Mm-hmm. And so Lincoln Beach was, as we're talking, you cross the Seabrook Bridge today and you go out down Haines Boulevard.
Yep.
Haines Boulevard. And there was Lincoln Beach, which was essentially the black beach.
Correct.
Early on. Yep. But then was... it was a beautiful resort area, right? It was a destination.
Yeah.
Right over the levee. So you used to have all the camps out there,
yep.
Fishing camps.
Yeah.
But you had this beach, and it not only included a sandy beach there on the lake, but it was an amusement. It was a destination
place.
Yeah,
yeah.
And that property's still there.
Yeah, some of the camp.
Right.
Yeah, it got destroyed by Katrina. The Lincoln Beach side that is off of Haines, of course, has been blighted. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we have a consultant working with us to strategically look at Lincoln Beach and how do we rebuild Lincoln Beach for the future.
Sure, some sort of arts district. And,
yeah.
You know, one of the both, as I listen to you, it's both exciting in that there's so many opportunities, and then it can also be overwhelming because there's so many opportunities.
Yes.
But just as you describe it, you have this beautiful part of the district that is on Lake Pontchartrain, which is this incredible lake listeners have heard me talk about before. You got the economic engine down the intercoastal waterway, mm-hmm. and all of that with the port that you talk about. And then again, sort of in a rough triangle down the other corner is this Jazzlands
Correct.
Park. That's just, I think that's like 200 acres.
Yes, 200 acres, not counting all the other land that's around
or
it.
The
as
private
well.
Land
yeah,
right around
the private,
it.
Yeah. And I really believe that we are, you know, we have, and of course, you know that we have people, developers that came to a table with plans.
Yes.
So there's plans.
Yes.
There's no money, right?
It's an age-old struggle.
Yeah, yeah, right? And so, and those developers may argue, mm-hmm. challenge that, but the previous administration didn't feel that they had what it takes or the finance to really pull this off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reality, you know. It's great that you have a vision, but if you have no money, there's no capital, you can't make it happen. And so I always tell, you know, community members, it's like, oh, why don't we have a shopping mall? Well, you could put up the money. We could have a shopping mall.
Sure.
Right? And shopping malls these days are dying everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Sure.
That's
it's not the way
reality.
We shop these
no.
days.
How do you shop, Mark?
Right. Now, a little neighborhood place as close as I can get
Correct.
On the way home.
So
right?
you're a neighborhood
you're
guy.
Yeah.
yeah. You about supporting local, right?
You want to support the small business,
Correct.
Right?
And I think, that's and I always tell people that a name brand didn't get to become a name brand, right? It started out small.
And New Orleanians have always loved the local. The mm-hmm. We're sitting in a neighborhood coffee shop, right?
Yeah.
New Orleans, big, big chain restaurants rarely succeed in New Orleans because mm-hmm. we don't need them. You got the little neighborhood.
Yeah, the big chain restaurant. You don't have that community substance inside. Like, I mean, I know you were sitting in Pontilli Cafe, and I could feel the community in here.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You see all the artwork, and, you know, and you see familiar faces.
Before you walked in, people were talking. And the moment you walked in, a young man who wrote a book just came up and gave you a hug.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And
it's a community spot. And I think that's where, you know, we're getting the East to recognize that. And I think sometimes we talk about it. Some of us talk about it, but we don't really do it.
Well, and that's part of why I wanted to have you on the podcast was to expose listeners that maybe don't even know about New Orleans East or don't even know the fact that we have this big, vibrant Vietnamese community mm-hmm. as part of New Orleans so that maybe it triggers people's interest.
Yeah.
You know, the Tet celebration is huge.
Oh, my God. That's like a three-day celebration,
huge.
Right?
And in recent years, it feels like more and more people that are mm-hmm. not a part of the Vietnamese community come out to celebrate and mm-hmm. the traditions and the colors and the food, all of it.
Yeah. And it's great because we've been doing it, I want to say, over 35 years now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Right?
And it makes, we've been here about 43 years.
And it gets people out into the East, too, right? I mean, I know that's not the reason, but people come and go, wow, there's a community. There's a culture here.
Correct. And I think there's the East offers so many reasons for you to come out, you know? And I think every neighborhood, every culture that we have, the Vietnamese community, just like you say, we have Tet, which is coming up in February, then Mary Queen of Vietnam, which is the largest Vietnamese church in New Orleans, they host a three-day festival. Starts off Friday night, and it has live concert. And if you ever wanted to try different Vietnamese food, that is a place to do it. You know, and then we have, you know, kids dressing up for the occasion. We get into our cultural outfits. I don't. But, you know, the little kids do. And then, you know, we pay our respect. I don't know if you know, but during Tet, we bring gifts to our elderly. Hmm. It's kind of like New Year for us.
Sure.
So we start the New Year. And so our New Year is that we would dress up in our new clothes and we would go to our elders. So like for me, I go to my parents' house, I go to my sister's house, and I go to my older brother's house, and I bring gifts. And when we talk about gifts, gifts could be like, you know, like I always bring my dad, you know, rice, because he still cooks for us. Yeah, so I bring 25 pounds of 50-pound bag of rice, and I donate that to him for the entire year so he could cook for us. And then my sister may bring him, you know, 4 cases of the fish sauce, because we eat fish sauce. So these are, that's what I mean by gift.
Sure.
So these are substances that help keep the family. And so, and then I'll go to my sister. My sister likes to drink wine. So I'll bring her a bottle, you know, a couple bottles of wine for her.
Sure.
And then the little kids get lucky money from us. You know, the new money, you would say. So I know Capital One is in our district, and I know they are always prepared, because they know that when the Vietnamese community, when the Tet is coming around, we'll go in and say, do you have new money? You know, and so, and they've been a great partner in appreciating our culture as well when we go in during the new year and ask for new money.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, I know you're busy. I just want to say thank you so much for sharing a little bit of the Vietnamese culture and community, as well as all of your district, New Orleans East and the Lower Nine, with our listeners today.
Mark, if I could just interject, I don't know if I mentioned to you or you know, but we have the first holiday parade in the East this coming Saturday on December the 15th. It is it's called the Tricentennial Jingle on the Boulevard Parade. You have to come out, catch your souvenir bell. So it's Saturday, December the 15th, and we are going to be taking, as the parade's going to start at Morrison and Crowder by Maria Goretti. We're going to head to Haines. From Haines, we're going to head to Reed, and from Reed, we are going to head to the Lake Forest Plaza. We have 12 family floats, so it's going to be a guarantee for family feel fun day. So bring the family out, claim your spot on our parade route, and have fun with us. And like I said, you know, we're rebuilding District E. It's where family comes first. And I hope that the parade echo the fact that we're about family. And so for those that are looking for a place to raise their family, check us out. Check us out in the E.
Thank you. And we'll clip that and we'll put it out on social media today or tomorrow so
that
people can hear it.
Thank you so much.
And then in future years, people hear that too and can look up the date. Thanks again.
All right. Thank you.
A big thanks to Councilwoman Cindy Nguyen for joining me today. I just love her passion and enthusiasm, not only about her culture, but about bringing New Orleans East and the Lower Ninth Ward back to their heydays. I especially like her focus on opportunities for the residents in those communities. Hey, before we wrap up, I want to tell you about the Old Number 77 Hotel. If you're planning a trip to New Orleans, the Old 77 should be on your short list. Why? Well, I'm glad you asked. It's in a great location in the Warehouse District, just a couple blocks from the French Quarter. It's close to lots of great places to eat and drink, and it's near the streetcar lines in case you decide to head out to City Park or uptown to Audubon Zoo or the River Bend. I love that the Old 77 has a wide range of choices when it comes to rooms. They have interior rooms for those who don't want any hint of daylight after a long night out. They also offer premium rooms and artist loft suites curated by New Orleans artists. There's really a ton of choices for a small hotel. But if all that wasn't enough, they also have an award-winning restaurant, Compère Lapin. Besides great food, they have excellent cocktails, including a delicious old-fashioned, my favorite drink. The Old 77 is located at 535 Chapultepec Street. Use code BBOLD77 when you book a room, and you'll save 25%. Plus, you get a little bit of lagniappe, a little something extra, in the form of a $10 credit at Toot Law for coffee and such in the morning. All right, y'all. As you can probably hear, this cold is knocking me out. You can find notes for today's show over at beyondbourbonst.com/80. You can also find links to our sponsors, The Old 77 and Two Chicks Walking Tours. Be sure to use those discount codes and save some money when you visit.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone who loves New Orleans. New episodes are available every other Wednesday. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.